To order. Today is Wednesday, the 20th of June. We will be entering a work session on House Bill 2918 relating to health benefit plan coverage and raising developmental disorder. Our new face we have today, Ms. Farr, Don Farr, and she will be going over 2918 with us. Ms. Farr.
Thank you. Committee, you have before you a memo from Legislative Fiscal Office. The bill summary is attached, as is a fiscal impact statement and a dash 15 amendment. The bill requires health benefit plans to cover treatment of pervasive developmental disorders subject to the same conditions as treatment of physical illness. It defines pervasive developmental disorder, and it directs the Health Resource Commission to review medical and behavioral health evidence on treatment of pervasive development disorder and report their findings to the 75th Legislative Assembly. The fiscal impact details the expenditures that the Public Employee Benefit Board under the Department of Administrative Services expects to incur, the minimal fiscal for the other agencies that are impacted by the bill. The dash 15 amendment limits coverage to a child enrolled in a plan who is under 18, limits coverage to provisions of health benefit plans, and defines rehabilitation services. The co-chairs have reviewed this amendment and are comfortable with the amendment.
Thank you. Are there questions on this measure? Oh, sorry.
Good morning.
Good morning. Representative Morgan and Representative Grard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The bill says that there's a $1.12 million impact in 09-11, slightly less than that in 07-09, just related to state budgets. And it also says that there is not going to be any money appropriated to cover the bill, the cost of this, but it's expected that the money will just be taken out of what we set aside each biennium to cover collective bargaining agreements with state agencies, and that causes concern to me. It further says here that the impact for OLEB, the new Oregon Educators Benefit Board that the state has will be enacting because of legislation that we're passed, is not known, but I think that you could probably make some very broad-based assumptions based on the increased cost for state agencies, because the number of teachers covered by OLEB is substantially greater than the number of people, state employees that are covered by PIB. And there is no fiscal impact at all, of course, for ordinary Oregonians and the world at large in the state. I have huge concerns for the fiscal impact of this that are, of course, very separated from the policy issues here. But given that here we are in the final days of the legislative session, reviewing a bill that I don't believe has had a great deal of going over, and I'm not convinced that this is good fiscal policy.
I can say this much. We heard this bill in the Health Services Senate Health Services Committee, and we've had several hearings on it. And so some of you are disadvantaged, but for those of us that was on the Senate committee have had a chance to hear this bill. In terms of its impact, fiscal impacts, that has been worked through. Ms. Farr, would you go through that?
Well, as the Chair Carter, Representative Morgan, I think that Representative Morgan detailed the findings that we have identified. The fiscal impact for the 2007-09 biennium would be $841,500. Of course, that would be divided among the different fund types. The general fund impact would be about $237,000. The reason why it's different difficult to assess the impact on the Oregon Educator Benefits Board is that when I talked with the Public Employee Benefits Board about this, they felt that the timing of the rollout, how the negotiations would occur, and the numbers, the data just wasn't readily available, was my understanding. So that's why we don't have a more defined fiscal. The other factor that implicates or that affects the fiscal is when you talk to Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield, my understanding is each of the different health benefit pools have different experience factors and therefore would have a different assessment. So you can't just assume that because it's 40 cents per member per month for the Public Employee Benefits Board that it would be the same for County City Services or it would be the same for the teachers group. So we just didn't have that information available, which is why it's unknown. It is referenced as an indeterminate with a potential fiscal impact in the fiscal. I don't know if that gets at your issues.
Does it kind of answer the questions that you were asking from Representative Morgan?
Well, just to reply, it gives me a small amount of additional information, but it doesn't really allay my concerns with the bills. I think that it would, that in order to ascertain whether this was good public policy or not, there would need to be some kind of estimate about the impact that it would have on ordinary Oregonians and their ability to afford health insurance, and certainly a more detailed impact on what this is going to do to the K-12 system and the community college system.
Further comments?
Are you ready for motion, Madam Chair?
I just want to be, thank you, Madam Chair, I just want to be sure I'm clear on this bill and the proponents may have to answer these questions. As I read the bill, it appears that this is allows a treatment for these children under a specific diagnosis code, pervasive development disorders, includes Asperger's, autism, a couple others. And it appears that that must mean that they've been denied that in the past. If they had that diagnosis as a comorbidity, they're not being covered for things that they would be covered for if it wasn't there. So my sense is this doesn't really open it up very much. And my sense also would be that probably insurers are either, were probably neutral in this. I think they probably don't see this as something that is going to drive health care costs up because of the way it's stated. So what we'll basically be doing here is helping out kids who have this disorder with the other issues they have as well as the disorder itself. The other part of this that I particularly like is that the treatment for this, these disorders has been very much in the air. We don't know what really works all the time. What works the best. It's a new area for us with Asperger's and other illnesses of that type that kids have. And this directs the Health Resources Commission to look at those, and I would assume make recommendations of what things really do work and don't work, so we have some evidence of what's the best way to go. And I assume those are the things that are in the bill as I read it. And if I'm wrong, please step up and correct me. But if I'm right, I think I'm very comfortable with this bill.
Thank you. Right.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I think given the issue of the fiscal impact both on several of the public systems and the unknown of not knowing what the impact is on the private systems, I noted here that Regents Blue Cross covers 85%, and my question would be why not the other 15%? Of what is it about the definition of what it's covering that's excluded, and where are the other insurance carriers? We're hearing about Blue Cross Blue Shield, and I don't know whether in the test in the committee, in the policy committee, whether these groups weighed in and provided some explanation.
I'd say that
15% is probably self-insured. Madam Chair, I assume the other 15% are probably either self-insured or have a policy with another group. More likely, most of those are self-insured, I would guess.
Madam Chair.
Representative Potek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say that we did hear this bill on in the House Health Care Committee. It did pass out unanimous for the do-pass recommendation prior to these amendments, so I can't speak to the amendments. But on the A15s, and my understanding is they tighten this up a bit, but do we have all of, I'm cut off on line 22, and I'm just wondering if the copiers, what's the last couple lines, because I think we only have, I have rehabilitation services means physical therapy, occupational therapy.
Yeah.
so I didn't catch what the terms and attributes were.
Okay. You're in dash 15.
I may need to read. None of us did.
Let's just enter these for a few minutes.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is for our legislative analyst, Ms. Farr. And I'm looking at page one of the fiscal analysis. And that last statement, I just want to walk through that statement to make sure that I have clarity in what's being said here. Typically, the Legislative Assembly establishes an appropriation to the Emergency Board to provide funding to state agencies for the effects of collective bargaining agreements that have not been completed by the close of session. The Legislative Office, Fiscal Office, believes that funding for implementation of this bill could be included in the distribution of this appropriation. Should I read that last sentence, that last statement, as a recommendation from Legislative Fiscal?
I don't, Chair Carter, Senator Gordley, I think it was intended to be a recommendation. As I understand the funding mechanism here, the Legislative Assembly does allocate a certain amount of money. I'm not sure exactly how much is in the co-chair's budget. I believe there may have been $130 million in the governor's recommended budget that's set aside for uncompleted or future negotiations that will occur between the Legislative Assembly. So that amount then is used to offset the costs associated with the negotiation process. So if there were not enough funding there, I suspect then it would be brought before the emergency board. I am not, you know, that's my understanding of the situation.
If I may follow up.
Somebody might.
Ms. Fart, then should I understand that, again, given what you've just said and given what's here on the page, that what you're trying to communicate to us is that there's a precedent for taking this approach?
Senator Chair Carter, Senator Gordon, I'd have to tell you that I am new with Legislative Fiscal Office, so it'd be difficult for me to comment on precedent. I'm more than welcome and willing to get back to you on that question. I did talk to the analyst, the budget analyst for this particular agency. He is the one that offered up this funding strategy, so my assumption was that this is something that we've done in the past.
That was going to be my next question, Madam Chair. Where did this approach come from? Who crafted it? Let me back up and say, first of all, I feel very strongly about the policy that is before us. We did hear the bill in the Health Policy and Public Affairs Committee, on which I served along with Senator Carter, and it's a policy that I really want to see us moving forward today. I stress today. But I also want us to have clarity about the funding mechanism and the possible impacts of the funding mechanism. And I think we need more information for the record than we currently have. So if the crafter of the approach could speak to it, that would be helpful.
Okay.
If
Dallas,
that person
would you
is
come?
Available.
Would you come? Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, for the record, Dallas Moran, the Legislative Fiscal Office, and I believe the crafter of that resolution, if you will. As to the question about precedent, I can't speak to that. I don't know that there's been, that I'm aware of, where we put in statute-specific required coverage in medical insurance. I do know that there have been a number of approaches like this offered over time, but also medical insurance coverage is also part of negotiations, and is crafted for state employees as part of the Public Employees Benefit Board operations with insurers. And that's the impact we're talking to here, I believe, is for the impact of state agencies. The increase or change in health care costs that are part of benefits package have consistently been dealt with what we call the salary pot allocation over time, that is part of the money that's been set aside to deal with that. Here we have just a statutory additional insurance requirement that the Public Employees Benefit Board will have to deal with in negotiating for the health care benefits.
Okay. I do know, colleagues, that if the constitutional amendment that we sent out for healthy kids, if that passes, this will very definitely fit under that piece. Dr. Bates?
Madam Chair, two things. One is that I vaguely remember, and maybe our folk can help me here, that we've been in a situation with the emergency board in the past where a bargaining agreement was reached while we were out of session, and we had allocated funds to cover that bargaining agreement until we were back in session. I can't remember for sure. It was not a health care issue. It was something else, if I remember right. So I think that's the issue I think you're leading to here, that the e-board does have some discretion as to a certain degree, as long as it still fits within the budget within which that bargaining agreement occurred. If it's outside that budget, they really can't do that. We can move money in budgets, but we can't move from one budget to another, nor unless we have money allocated in a separate budget to be used for that, we can't do it. So maybe E-Board has some way of dealing with this to a limited degree, but not in a wide open fashion. Is that correct, Mr. Dallas?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, essentially yes, that when these agreements are reached through bargaining units or whatever, they come to the emergency board and report those changes in compensation plans to the emergency board. To the extent that there are significant adjustments required to agency budgets, they're usually dealt with in the emergency board, usually through the allocation, what we call the policy. I forgot the name of it now. The funding pool, the salary pot distribution.
Senator Russell?
Usually not my usual role on this committee, but to perhaps add a little clarity, I believe what is being the question, the answer to the question, and what Mr. Wyand is trying to say is that the special purpose appropriation reserved in the emergency board fits, you know, for public employee salary negotiations, fits the statutory definition for distribution of these funds as well. I also believe that part of this funding is potentially tied to the passage of the Healthy Kids Program, and if it does not pass, that's why there's going to be a special purpose appropriation made to the emergency board. Is that a fair clarification?
Madam Chair, Senator Westland, I don't know much about the Healthy Kids, but the other one, yes.
There you go.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know a lot about all these inner workings either, but they all sound good. But I think it seems like we're always being asked to consider, you know, and everybody's always afraid of, you know, oh, it's going to raise costs. When do we ever get to hear from the side of the coin where we get to hear what the savings might be if we use a preventive approach? And this I don't know much about autism either, but I know that it's of epidemic proportions in our state for whatever reason, just like MS is, just like meningitis, just like all kinds of things that you hear about. We have an inordinate amount, and in my neck of the woods, meningitis and MS are higher than, and also colon cancer are the highest, among the highest in the state, for whatever reason. But when you hear stuff like that and you think, wouldn't it be better to put something in up front and take care of this? You know, I've got a letter, you probably all got it too, in my bill file from a woman with a 7-year-old who was diagnosed. But if he'd been diagnosed a year before, he wouldn't have had to put up with a year's worth of physical discomfort, because they did have insurance, or maybe they had money to pay for all these alternative treatments and go to different doctors and find out what they could try to do for their child, who's now doing well, apparently, but a lot of people can't. So I would like to also have us consider, among the potential costs, and we went through this with mental health parity. Poor Dallas, you're getting the burn of it. I'm not talking to you, but in that sense. But the numbers were all over the map. It's going to cost us an arm and a leg. It's going to put people out of business and blah, blah, blah. And it didn't. It hasn't. It's helped people. And maybe this is one of those cases. And I never, unless we get somebody who actually comes up and tells us anecdotally these things, and then how do we weigh those when we decide? It can't always be about money.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Senator.
I sense you are ready for a motion.
You sense right.
Madam.
Hold on,
Madam Chair, just real quick, I think there's an error here that I want to make sure nobody jumps on later on. First of all, it just occurred to me, Dallas, that the rates we get for insurance are annual rates for our biannual session, so we must have some mechanism for dealing with the change in rates that occur for other reasons from year to year to year, too. So I'm not too concerned about the conversation we just had on that basis. On page 2 here of your recommendation, though, that the CCIS estimates that premiums would increase by 10% if they're similar to PEB increases. Well, PEB increases aren't 10%, so that must be a figure that can't be 10% for this.
I'll defer to Donald.
Chair Carter, Senator Bates?
Yes.
Don't start that.
I had my little cheat sheet here, sorry. Just took me a minute. Long pause. CCIS, as I mentioned earlier, Regents indicates that the cost per member per month would vary depending on the health benefit pool. So they weren't able to get the information from Regents in time to get a more specific number in here. So what they applied is the 40 cents per member per month that was the estimate or quote given to the PEB health benefit pool. If it were similar, that's what this is intended to communicate, if it were indeed 40 cents, it would be approximately a 10% increase in premiums.
How much are the premiums? A dollar? I mean, I don't understand that. How could it be 10%?
For this portion,
just the incremental increase,
not the total premium.
Thank the incremental increase.
Really clear, okay?
It was clear to all the rest of us. This is, Madam Chair, I move the -15 into House Bill 2918.
Senator Weston moves -15 amendments. Amendments to House Bill 2918. Any objections?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2918 as amended to the full committee with a strong due pass recommendation.
Senator Russell moves House Bill 2918A to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Comments, objections? Senator Morgan?
I'm going to be a no vote in the committee, Madam Chair, because I'm just very uncertain about the impact that this is going to have, not just on state government, but across the board in the state. So I'd like to have the opportunity to gather some more information on this.
I'll
join my colleague.
And while I support the policy, I too will, because there's too many questions that remain unanswered, and so I will try to seek additional information to satisfy myself. It's not, as you know, we are required to have impact statements of fiscal impact statements, and so for whatever reason that did not occur, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do that. And also, you know, if we don't have them by the time it hits the floor, members are going to be requesting those that information. So I need to vet more information, to be quite honest with you.
Let the record show that Senator Morgan and Representative Girard objection. Motion is carried. House Bill 2918. Do we have a volunteer on the House side?
To the full committee.
On the House side, not the Senate side.
Excuse me. To the full committee.
Okay.
Full committee.
Yes.
I can't
volunteer. Okay. Nancy, here it is.
Be here.
Okay. Nancy. She was trying to be kind and give everybody else a chance, and she forgot she's doing what we
can do. House side for four.
Representative Nathanson.
I can't.
Then Senator Wexler for the Senate. Would you, Mr. Buckley, like to carry this on the floor of the House?
I would be glad.
Representative Buckley was there for the House. Thank you very much. Close work session on 2918. Open a work session on House Bill 2524.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's nice to be on this side. House Bill 2524, you should have the staff measure summary in front of you. It has been referred to Ways and Means. It would require an Oregon health care acquired infection reporting program within the Department of Administrative Services Office for Oregon Health Policy and Research. It was referred to Ways and Means because of the fiscal on the bill. We have directions. We have an amendment drafted that would put general fund appropriation, that we have a -A7 amendment that appropriates the $201,467 to the Department of Administrative Services for purposes of the act.
Okay. Questions?
Madam Chair, I don't have a question, but I have a comment.
Senator Winters, I'm sure that all of you have been tracking the number of of death that are attributed to hospital-acquired infections across the country. And this bill is a good bill. It provides some transparency that we haven't had in the past. It's reporting systems that we haven't had in the past. And it's much needed. Any way that we can reduce the number of infections that are acquired in hospitals, we can also reduce the number of deaths. I'm sure that the doctor would agree with me.
Yep.
Since in the state of Oregon, we have very poor guidelines and in terms of how we think it looks at our healthcare institutions. So I just think that this is a good deal for us, and it certainly is good policy that we would have some kind of requirement in place to report on infectious measures in our state. I'm sorry, Representative Kutak, and come down the line to Representative Garrard. Oh, Representative Garrard, and then Representative Williams.
Thank you. Well, he had his hand up first.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Garrard, you're number one.
Yes.
Then Representative Kutak, number two, and Representative Williams, number three.
Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. In the summary, it says declares an emergency effective July 1, 2007,
mm-hmm.
but then declares January 1, 2010 as the first report effective date. Is that conflicting? Why the emergency clause if the first report's not due until 2010?
As I was just saying a few minutes ago, we don't have any places in our state that...
Looks like the answer may be to your right, Madam
Chair. There's a couple of reasons. One, it's going to take time to establish the standards, because currently we do not have uniform standards from hospital to hospital in the state. And two, it will take some time to collect that data and get it and correlate it and analyze it before it's released. Surveys?
Absolutely correct. The only thing I'd add is you need a large enough database to have some real meaning for this. And that'll take about 3 years to get that together so you can see what the real trends are. You can have a couple of cases in 1 month and then nothing for a year. You want to see the overall trend to see where we're really going. And, you know, with what we're dealing with in hospitals now, especially MRSA and a couple other infections, we really have to track this more carefully. And Senator Russell may remember also we had very good testimony in a different committee about what happens when you put a spotlight on an issue and how things can improve quickly when that spotlight occurs. And that's why this bill is an excellent bill.
Okay. Further comments?
Madam Chair. Ask about check received.
I'm sorry?
No, I just said ask and answer about receive the answer.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. It was you, number three. Cortex, too.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I want the last. I would echo my...
I have a terrible sinus infection, so I'm not tracking today. So
that's okay. To echo what the senators were saying about needing time, we heard this bill in the House Healthcare Committee. It's a good bill. It came out unanimously. There's a lot of collaboration that needs to take place. I think, you know, having standards, having some uniformity. We don't want to repeat what other states have done and roll out reports prematurely and have information out there that's really not accurate. And so, but the emergency clause is good in the sense that it gets started right away, the conversations get started, the work gets started, but until it doesn't make sense to have that report until it's, you know, it's sound. So this is a good bill. It's going to be good for consumers and good for keeping healthcare costs down as well, eventually.
And I can attest to it. I've been in the hospital lately, and I've never gotten an infection. So, and my last surgery was, I had the surgery one day, left the next day at 11 in the morning, and so I didn't have a chance. But I do want to say, while I was there and not medicated and could notice what was going on around me, is they... Oh, everyone seemed really keyed into this whole issue, and they were doing everything they could, as far as I know, what's right to do to prevent that. And I commend them for that. So hopefully the results will reflect some of those efforts as well, because I think a lot of people do take that's very serious to them. And if it becomes competitive among hospitals, that's great, mm-hmm. to have the least number or none. So. I think they're doing a great... I mean, the ones I've been in, they've been doing a great job.
Senator Chair. Senator Norby, and then Senator Winters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What collaboration is expected with the public, the patient safety commission for this measure?
Madam Chair, if I may, they would be part of the advisory group. As you well aware, the Patient Safety Commission has a separate voluntary reporting situation right now on a variety of safety issues related to primarily the hospitals. And they did come and testify. They'll be partners in the advisory group. I don't really quite recall why we decided to support a separate entity outside the Patient Safety Commission, but maybe I think it was to make sure they could focus on what they were doing and to set it aside in the Office of Health Policy and Research.
Now, if I could possibly answer the question. Well, the Patient Safety Commission is set up so that physicians and hospitals can share what has gone wrong at times. And if you make this a situation where it becomes public knowledge, what specific place it went wrong, what something happened, that information stops coming forward. This information is in public safety is basically peer review. We want to know what's gone wrong in a certain area so we can correct it from happening in that area and from anyone else running into the same problem again. So it's keeping this thing kind of anonymous so people can really share information. But putting that person on this board is excellent. So there will be a cross-fertilization here as far as information. Information is concerned. It's a good way to do it. We handle it very nicely.
Senator, so that you can see if he has some information.
My follow-up, again, just to add clarity, the Patient Safety Commission doesn't require mandatory reporting. It's all voluntary. Would reporting through this measure be mandatory or voluntary?
Is
there
anything, Ms.
Fisher,
are you on the committee?
I was on the House Healthcare Committee, and my understanding it is mandatory.
Can someone point that out in the bill that it is mandatory?
Is there any audience that this bill belongs to?
Maybe.
Doctor, will you come forward and help us
yes.
out?
Madam Chair, if you look on page 3 of the bill, or page 2, I'm sorry, about line 18, sub 6, the Office of Health Policy Research shall provide measures, and then following that, they shall adopt rules prescribing form, manner, and frequency for disclosure. So that may be.
Oh, look at line 4 on page 2. I think that may be.
Senator Carter, members of the committee, I'm Julie Smith, the administrator for the Office of Health Policy and Research, and this bill does require that healthcare facilities, including hospitals, nursing facilities, freestanding birthing centers, and ambulatory surgery centers all report to us.
So, if I may, line 4 on page 2.
That answers the question, but I will say again for the record that I am concerned about the Patient Safety Commission not requiring. It's all voluntary, and I think that's something that we need to address next session, colleagues.
Do you have any input on that, Dr. Ames? Advance any thoughts towards Senator Gordley?
Senator Carter and Senator Gordley, I would echo what Senator Bates said, that there were some discussions. We've all worked very closely together on this bill, the Department of Human Services, Public Health Epidemiologists, the Patient Safety Director, and our office to try to come up with what has actually the Patient Safety Commission took the lead in having a sort of a consensus agreement around looking at some of the national standards, and we've been working very closely with them. But at the present time, it is voluntary for the very reasons of being more of a peer review process on that side.
Thank you, Ms.
It does. Thank you, Madam Chair.
For the comments, Ms. Kotek.
Thank you.
I just wanted to add to the good representative Boone. Thankful that she didn't get an acquired infection. That is not what happened to your senator down here. And your senator down here had a serious acquired infection that turned out to be E. coli. And so, it is something that is very, very serious. And this bill is very timely.
And we have excellent nurses and doctors and all of that. There's no indictment against our professional staff, but the fact is the rates of infection are going up, and we need to find methods to push those rates down. I'm here because we've got excellent antibiotics and other things. They work with me for, what, 5 days in regard to?
Yes.
But the fact is that infections can be acquired. And so I'm glad we're putting a spotlight on it.
Exactly.
Is that it? I'm sorry. Well, that's number one. He said Bates, and then you asked an answer. It's getting ridiculous out here.
I thought you had for the question.
No, I don't. I think it's a very good bill. I was ready to move the bill. Let the other Senator Bates do it.
I move the Dash 7s into House Bill 2524.
Senator Wesson moved the Dash 7 amendments into House Bill 2524. Any objections? Seeing none, Senator Westland?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2524 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Westland, move House Bill 2524 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Comments or objections? Senator Bates?
I'd like to volunteer to take the bill.
Okay. Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Bates will carry to the full committee on the Senate floor. Volunteer on the House side. Representative Morgan. Further comments? Senator Bates?
Madam Chair, I believe this is our last bill.
Today.
Uh-huh.
And you're leaving
in the morning.
In the morning.
Yes, sir.
And by the time you get back, do we expect this committee to still be open, or are we going to be closed when we get back?
Well, I think this committee is kind of indeterminate, undetermined, let me say, in terms of the status of this committee. But I think we might have some last minute things we have to come back to, but it's not officially closed yet.
I'm sure in the off chance that by the time you get back that we are closed.
Okay.
I want to take a moment here to thank you for your leadership today.
Thank you.
And we usually talk about leadership and all those usual things, but what I remember most from you is you've got something that I think that many of us sorely lack in this process, especially some of us as chairs. You have laughter and a sense of humor, which I really appreciate. Thank you very much for your work this session.
That's great. Is there anybody?
Madam Chair, put that thing down. And while we're buying some time here, things can move along as they come. We're moving right along.
Sometimes you're supposed to fill in with
me. Okay, well, talk about
we are not going to tell jokes or anything like that, but I would like to offer you some advice on your flight tomorrow.
Okay.
Since you have a sinus infection, you might want to talk to the good doctor, get something, because flying is probably going to be hard.
I expect to see you in my office in 15 minutes.
Yeah. So, and also, I would like to thank you for your just excellent leadership and compassion and generosity and everything. And I'm not stalling. I'm really, this is what I want to say. And everything you've done to make this the best committee ever. And I'm very glad I was on it, and I enjoyed working with you, and I apologize for missing some of our meetings in the morning.
Well, I think you don't have a real reason for apologizing
for surgery, I think. Yeah, but so anyway, as we are moving right along here, I'm going to shut up so other people can say things too. But I will tell you when you can pick that thing up.
All right, Representative
Morgan. Madam Chair, I want to thank you for the privilege of serving with you on this committee too. I think that one of the great gifts of my legislative career than getting to know you. And I really do enjoy the kind of leadership that you're so famous in the building for, the consensus building and just kind of not looking at the reasons why not, but looking at the reasons why. And I think you've done a great job on this committee. I just want to add my voice to the appreciation.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Somebody keep talking.
This is Representative Girard.
Yeah. I'm number one.
Why don't you just go down?
I just wanted to add my voice to the choir. This is the first time I've served on a committee with you, Senator, and the only thing I knew of you is what Senator Harper told me. And he was absolutely right. You're a great leader and a great lady.
and it's been a real education for me to be on this committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Nathanson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's going to be hard to top all the comments that I've made before. I just want to add my accolades also. And as a freshman, it's a real incredible experience to have the privilege of being around all of these experienced people and have your guidance and leadership for me individually as well as one other member of a committee. It's just been a wonderful, amazing experience to start my term here, and thank you very much for helping show us all how you get us through thousands of line items and millions, actually billions of dollars worth of programs.
I just want to say I'm proud that you're my senator, and it's been a real pleasure serving this great experience for a freshman. Thank you.
Thank you.
You are a phenomenal woman.
Oh, thank you.
And I hope that you are writing that book. 22 years of experience in this institution, you have much to share. And I would say that there are a lot of young people, children, who would benefit from knowing your story. It's a remarkable story.
So can I pick it up now?
No!
Not yet. We're not finished with you. You're just too anxious to get on that plane.
Enjoy it.
I want to echo and add my accolades, and I want to say we're proudly wearing buttons, because whether you guys know it or not, this button says Margaret Carter, and it's a button that when we return on Sunday, the three of us, and we've become accustomed to seeing the three of us sitting up here on this dais. The three of us are going back to Memphis to get our chair elected to a national office. And she's well deserving. Her leadership is not only in Oregon, but she's provided outstanding leadership, particularly in the area of health and health disparities and some of those issues that nationally, and she tells me that she's going to get very aggressive when she becomes president on eradicating meth and some of the things that we're doing in this state. So, you know, I want to echo, we not only honor her here, but we will be honoring her nationally on Friday.
Senator Marcet.
Margaret, that's what you need, is to be more aggressive. You're attacking. So I can hardly wait till you get back. I do appreciate the opportunity to tag along with this committee. Your graciousness and good humor and goodwill have allowed me to participate, and I look forward to being back again next session, and I really appreciate your leadership, and I anxiously await your return to see what kind of changes have actually taken place in here.
Madam Chair, there's been only one disappointment.
Oh, what is that? Senator,
I don't know if all of you know, but she's an excellent cook. And she hasn't graced us with some of her cakes.
Next session, you guys a cake. I am. When I come back,
when she comes, we'll look forward.
That's right.
Can we get that scheduled just to meet? Just eat your cake. That'd be fine with me. Yes, absolutely.
One big cake, Bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Westman.
It is my privilege, on behalf of the entire committee, to present to you an insufficient token of our appreciation. And it is conditioned upon the presentation of your fine culinary skills to this committee. So don't even think about opening that if you're not going to make us a cake. Now, I could continue this, you know, some of these maudlin, genuine, sincere remarks, and they are very sincere, but to hell with that. We want you to get out of here. We want you to get to Tennessee. We want you to get some serious behind down here and come back the president of a national organization.
All right.
That's what we're talking about.
I want to thank the committee very, very much, because I can tell you, in the 22 years I've been here, and I have chaired many committees, but I've never had
the depth and the intelligence and the cooperativeness of a committee like I've had this committee. I mean, and I have to tell you that everybody said when we first started off, you have a big job to do because you have some really outspoken voices and independent personalities. I said, yes, you're right. We just try to pay great respect to everybody that is there and do the best that we can for the people of Oregon. And we indeed have done that. You passed a budget out of here that was greatly, greatly enhanced. And you passed substantive information in terms of bills out that would really make a difference. And I'm very proud that we were able to pass the bills that's going to help our physically disabled children. I wish I had more energy today to show it in that bill that we passed. But that makes me feel really, really very good to know the empathy of the people on this committee. I'm telling you, I don't think the president and the speaker could assemble another committee that was as forthright and highly, highly opinionated, and we very much knew we didn't agree with something, but at the same time we were able to work through it. So I'm just appreciative of the fact that I was able to be your chair of this committee, and I humbly accepted this job, even though I did not want this job. I humbly accepted this job from the president of the Senate because he felt that we should do it, and I appreciate every one of you for being on this committee. Now, can I touch this?
No, you can open it first.
I can open this first. Excellent creation, that's pretty well. I shall keep this. As a matter of fact, my papers have been asked for by college, and all this will be going in my papers. Very, very much so. Thank you again.
Now you may do what you want with it.
Okay.
Thank you, Margaret.
But don't leave this weekend without thinking that we don't come back to work, because I think we do.
Yeah. Everybody dismissed. Thank you.